Accession number 8171, reel 27.
Mr. Metalman, reel 27.
Yes, swimming with the children, and we were going for little walks, and we were going into the village, walking in the village, and they came, the little ones, holding my hands. Thinking of it now, even to the Russians sometimes, they must have wondered what was going on, because now it was a Russian village, and I was the only German there, and everyone kind of respected me. I think it is a hopeful sign, when I think back towards it now, that under these horrible circumstances that we had committed so many crimes, and that all people must have known it in the village, suddenly now this village found itself within the occupied area, but without Germans. The German army had moved out, had gone further, and for weeks now there was one German, and that one German was treated very correctly and often very nicely. People sometimes gave me something. I walked through the village towards a pub, and then some woman had baked something or what, and they waved out and they beckoned me to come, and I went to the door and they gave me a little bit of kind of cake or things like that. They didn't have much fruit. I think it was a bit early for the apples, or apples came later, I suppose. And obviously in those parts they have nothing imported at the best of times. I don't think even now they rely on imported stuff. But all these little things the peasants, they make quite a bit with milk, with sour milk or so. And people offered it to me, and me walking around there with the children. And all the time while I was doing that, my tank was standing next to the house, and my rifle was in the house, and the ammunition, I think I had the ammunition in the tank, I'm not quite sure. But then one can't look up. Can't lock up the tank. Anyone who really would have wanted to get at these things, they could have done so. So I think it was on a Saturday evening, but I'm not quite sure about that anymore. But Saturday evening was always a special. One had a special feeling on a Saturday evening, the same as one has now. At least I have it now. We went to the pub again, and we hardly had arrived when one of the boys came rushing up and said, Kennedy, there are German soldiers in the village at our house, at your tank. And I thought, oh no, my God, no, that was the last thing I wanted. I don't know, I think I must have got pale. Leon said something, are you all right, Kennedy, or what? And I didn't feel all right at all. I felt terrible. Well, what could I do? I had to walk back with the children, and somehow rumors go quickly in the village. They go like fire. On the way, villagers were calling out and then saying something. The German soldiers were there. Maybe they had come through the village that they had seen them. And I was barefoot, and whether I wore a shirt or what, I was brown anyway, working on the fields and washing. Yes, I washed every day, but my hair wasn't cut, and I must have looked a proper tramp. And I remember the feeling before I came to Atyet's house. Atyet stayed. He didn't come with me. He came later. The feeling I had while I was still out of sight of Atyet's house, where my tank was, I had a feeling, it's hardly to explain, that I was amongst friends. I felt protected, as long as I was not inside of the German army, so to say. It's contradictory. But that was my feeling. Then I came round the corner and I saw a jeep standing there, and I think I saw them then walking about, and and they had, was a sergeant and two mechanics or something like that, the sergeant from the repair troop. And the way he looked at me when he saw me, you know, and I said something, well, what else do you expect me to look, you know, you left me here for, I think it was more than a month now. I'm not sure, not quite sure. And yes, he didn't say very much, but there was something disapproving in his look and how I related to the peasants and went in and out. And they had already done some of the repair work. Afterwards, it was quickly done. It only needed some sort of a spare part to be put in. That was really all. And then he said, now get your things ready and we go. And I thought, just like this, just go. I had thought at least that I could stay the night. Now, being dragged out of the pub and having to go within an hour or something like that, I was so low in every way. I couldn't explain it to myself. As whether I had started a new life, a life of peace and of friendship, which I had missed for years, never experienced. And suddenly that was all being taken away from me. And the girls were there, and they all, I could sense it, they all had a feeling for my feeling. They knew I was sad, and they were sad too. And then I said, I got to go, and they saw how I did my packing, and they helped me, and haven't you forgotten this, and haven't you forgotten that? And I put it into the jeep, and the sergeant said, he's going to drive the tank. And I was quite happy about that. I did not like to get into the tank out of sight and drive off. So I was sitting as a co-driver in the jeep next to the driver. I wasn't even driving the jeep. And people from across the road, they had come across, had come to the fence. And then Adjets had turned up too. Normally, Adjets was a good drinker. Nothing would get Adjets out of the pub. But he knew I was in trouble somehow, and I was called away. And a quarter of an hour later, Adjets turned up. And he stood there and looked forlorn and wanted to say something. And, well, we didn't know what to say now. And there we were. And somebody of my mates, they said something about the stupid peasants, because they stood all there in a line and just stared at us. And I know before I had experienced something like that, if I saw a line of peasants just standing there, they looked pretty stupid, I suppose. But now, to me, there was much more in it. I had a loving feeling for those people. And when he said that, the stupid peasants look at them, something like that, he said, and I could have hit him. That's how I felt. So I went to everyone, and Matka, she cried. She openly cried and said something about her boys. Now they are in the war, and she didn't know, or they didn't know where they were. And she said something, now you go out and the killing starts again, and what for? And to be honest, I had a lump in my throat. I felt like crying. I didn't, but how I got through it without crying, I don't know. Then the girls, they too, they were very sad. And I got a kiss from both of them. The only kiss I ever got from Katya, from Sonia too. And normally, I think I explained it earlier, Mother was always watching Sonia, because Sonia, she had a liking for me, I think, but this time she let Sonia get on, and Sonia really grabbed me and kissed me, and a good kiss from Katya. And then the children cried, and then Adjets, he didn't know what to say. We just patted each other's back, and into the jeep and off. And well, that was evening, late evening. I remember it was a lovely evening, sunshine, and I looked back, and there they stood in that unmade village road, which I knew so well now, and just waving, and we blew up a lot of dust. And then I couldn't see them anymore. No, I sat there in that jeep and driving with the others. They wanted to talk about this and about that. I just didn't want to know. Back to the unit, well, it was quite a drive. I think it was a few hours' drive. And getting there, seeing all my mates, yes, but I was very unhappy, and it took me a long time to get over it. That was the Mankovo affair.
Did you think it surprising that there was no real hostility to a German soldier in a Russian village?
Thinking of it now, yes, but I think in the beginning it was known to them that if something would have happened to me, something horrible would have happened to the village. And whether they discussed it amongst themselves or what, I don't really know who was the chief of the village. There were some in Leon's place, some older men. I think they were the party leaders or what, and some of the women too. Misha, for instance, in on the fields, but I think she was a secretary of the farm of the kolkhoz. They were intelligent people, and they were rather locked up. They treated me very correctly. And no more. But others treated me very friendly. And especially after we had a few drinks. After I had a few drinks. They never totally, of course, accepted me. Never totally. As I said, with the girls, for instance. I never went out with a girl. Never had anything to do with a girl. Also, there were some, I think, who would have liked closer contact. You see it by the way one is being looked at. And after all, I was the only young man in that village. But I never really was invited to other places, but I sometimes went in when we were going down to the pub. Somebody called Adyats in and wanted to talk something over with Adyats, and he said, then come in, and we went in, and so I knew quite a few peasants around there, and they always greeted me nicely. Gendry, and said a few nice words. It is a strange affair when I think back of it, yes. They could have bumped me off so easily. At least they could have shown hostility all along, because I was totally dependent on their food. They fed me, I lived with them. And it was more to than just that they did it out of fear. I think they realized there was another human being who really couldn't help it either. And I made my views known, not in a great political context, but I expressed it, Vojna nekharosh, war is no good. Very often I said, war is no good, and talked about Pobjeda. No, that's not. I mix the Russian up now. But how nice it would be to live in peace and all be friends. And in this way, I expressed myself very often. And that was agreeable to them, and they expressed themselves in the same way.
Did you know of the German army taking reprisals for the killing of Germans?
Yes. I do know. Not so much in villages. I have no personal experiences of that. But I know in one town. What was the name of the town? I think it was Slaviansk. Somewhere close, not quite in the Donets Basin. Some German soldier had been killed. I think he was drunk. It was not from our unit, so I cannot really recall the exact details, but he had been killed. And straight away, I think it was a mayor, was a woman mayor. What was the name of a mayor in Russia? Well, it doesn't matter. The most important people of the town were rounded up, I think about 20. But there again, it's so long ago. But that number 20 somehow is on my mind. And they were shot straight away. And the killing stopped. Well, it never happened again. I think the worry didn't stay long in Slaviansk.
This happened in the town where you were?
That happened in the town where we were, but we were not actually connected with that, but we knew about it. We heard about it. I think he was murdered in the night, and we heard it in the morning that it happened. And then I think the unit of which he belonged to carried that out. I'm not quite sure. But I also know of other killings of this kind, but then I only heard about it and never was in that town. And I didn't see the shooting, but I knew that they were being shot very quickly. But I heard the shooting, it's quite possible. But it's so long ago, really, too.
Can you tell me the details of the story about the hut burning?
Oh, yes. Now, of course, that was at a different time. We burned so many huts. But this one stuck in my mind, as sometimes things stick in your mind and others, they disappear from your memory. It was on the retreat. Now, when was it? 42, 43, was it in December or January? It's impossible to remember. Anyway, many of our units had been smashed, and we were now operating in Kampfgruppen, battle groups. And this one, I remember, no, it wasn't Cheka, the name of our commanding officer was Lindemann. And now we were moving backwards to the west, of course, and whatever we could destroy, we blew up, or anything that was the order. Lindemann told us about it, scorched earth policy. Verbrannte Erde, I think we called it. Burned earth. Verbrannte Erde. I think that was the name we Germans gave it to it. Everything, bridges, or, well, at that time we didn't come across a railway, but railway junctions and things like that, signal boxes or so, that was a preferable target for destruction. Any building, anything we could do damage to prevent the Red Army following and being able to make use of it, I think that was one of the main reasons. Anyway, we were coming back, and suddenly we saw a group of small houses, small peasant cottages, three, four, very poor cottages, standing on their own in the snow, and it was like a white desert. And we went over, Lindemann told us, a few of us, while the main group, were we about 50 or something like that, marched on to go over and burn them. And I was one of them. And I think we were about six or seven, eight, went over. And they were saying, well, you take that one and you take that one, and I was going to take this one. And I came to the cottage, and I knew there were some people in there. You somehow sense it, and you also see that the snow was trodden down. Thatch cottages, very poor little cottages they were. And I went to the door and then kicked the door open and stood back, and I couldn't look in. Now I was standing in the white snow, you know, I think even with sunshine, I couldn't see what was going on in the dark there. But Lindemann and some others who stood further back, who could look into the door from where they were standing, they said, all right, go in. And then I just went in, and there were between 12 or 15 or even 20 people. They were all kind of lying on the floor and sit leaning against the wall. It was pretty dark in there. There were old people, mothers with children, with babies, children, women. And so I went in there and said, here, out, you know, out. And they were falling down on their knees, and they were shouting and calling and saying, no, you know, they have come from other villages already. And if I would take that away from them, this shelter, it would mean that they are starving and that is their only chance of survival. And I said, I didn't want to listen, ouch, I don't want to listen to your stories. But I realized knowing it was very, very cold. It was 20, 30 degrees below freezing. I realized, especially a woman with babies or so, to take that shelter away from them. There was nothing around. I don't know how far the next villages were away. Many kilometers. But most probably they were destroyed too. So I started arguing with them. I couldn't get them out. There was a woman, she came to me and held her baby, more or less saying, "Here, look, this is what you are going to kill. You know, my baby, me, all of us." And I felt a bit awkward about it all. I must say that it's the only excuse I can say for myself, perhaps. But I knew they had to come out, and then they didn't want to come out. Then an old woman came and kind of prayed in front of me, and she kind of kissed my boots and tried to kiss my boots. And I got so fed up with it, I wanted to push her away, and we both fell over and rolled on the floor. I shouldn't laugh. And then I got up, and then I had enough. I thought, I have to decide something. I got my pistol out, and an old man was standing next to me with a small child. The child was a boy or girl, I think it was a girl. It was nestling up to him for protection or so. He hadn't said very much. He just stood there quietly. I took my pistol out and I put it against the side of his head as a threat, more or less to say, if you don't go out now, I'll shoot him. And he just looked calmly at me and said something, "Well, if you burn our hut," he said, "you just as well shoot us." And then he pointed out to the child, "and you just as well shoot her as well. That would be kind." Something like that, he said. That, of course, took totally the wind out of my sail. What could I do there? I had no intention of shooting anyone of this kind. I might have been a nasty soldier, but somehow that was beyond it. I only had used that as a threat. And by that time, I heard him outside already. Lindemann had come, because now our Kampfgruppe was moving forward and we wanted to get away from it all. And he was saying something to me, "What the hell are you doing here?" Because he hadn't seen any smoke. And I think from one of the other cottages smoke had come out already. He kind of told me off, and I said, "I can't get them out." "Oh," he said, "well, that's their lookout, that's bugger them," or whatever he said in German. "We are not interested in that." He said, "Come on, go out." And these cottages, the thatch goes very low. They're very poor cottages. One room in there. It goes very low. It goes to a chest, to the level of your chest, really. It was snow-covered, of course, the thatch. But inside was dry straw, dry thatch. And he started it, and I followed him. We just set it alight. I think he had a lighter, and I had matches or whatnot. And you just set it alight here, a little bit of straw there, a little bit of straw. And it very quickly starts to burn. And then we just walked away. And I can imagine, there are no ceilings in these cottages. The flames must have crept up in the inside. They must have seen it from the inside now, the flames coming up, and they must have seen the smoke. And we walked back, and I saw them all come tumbling out, because... And then smoke came out. I think it must have filled up with smoke very quickly. The cottage, the one room they were all in, they all came tumbling out. It was a horrible picture. The old people, the children, and they were crying and falling over each other and into the cold snow, and all their protection gone. And they dragged something out, I suppose, because they had some food. I don't know in detail what they did. It was a horrible picture. And we just walked back, and then I remember there was a kind of a poof or what, and the flame had broken through the snow cover on the roof, and it was a yellow brown slowly moving up kringle of smoke, a really thick smoke, and they all standing out there and shouting and crying and whatnot. And of course we moved away, and the others, I could see they must have had some of the same experience, my mates who burned the other huts, because they too, they somehow were quiet and didn't like it. And somebody perhaps said something, did you have some trouble or what? And for a long time, when we walked away for a kilometer and more, I could see one could see the smoke rising into the clear sky, and I felt very much like a murderer, worse than that, really. To condemn people who are totally, have nothing to do with the war effort, they were ordinary, over the old people, as I said, children, women. They had no protection, they couldn't defend themselves against anything. That was their only defense, to have protection against the cold weather, and we had taken that away from them. And they already had lost their villages. They were refugees to this little place, overcrowded. Oh, it was horrible to do a thing like that.
Would the walls have been burnt as well?
Yes. The walls of these Russian cottages, they are kind of stone and mud put in between. Yes, once a place like that starts burning, the walls start to crumble. More or less their protection was more or less totally gone, yes.
I think there's one thing that you want to correct, which was the name of the German partisan who was working with the Russians.
Yes, when we were in the Crimea, we had a pretty tough time against the partisans, meaning the partisans were very effective. They blew up quite a few vehicles and killed quite a few of our soldiers. And during the night, if we possibly could help it, we did not move. We stayed where we were, and of course there they could not attack us. The leader of the Russian partisans was a German emigre communist, and I named him as Vogt earlier on when you asked me about it, and I realized then it wasn't his right name, but I couldn't think of the right name. Now, having thought about it, I know for sure it was Voss, V-O-S-S.
I'd like you to ask you to repeat a story you told earlier, because we had some technical problem with the recording, and that was the story of the hanging of the old woman at the bridge.
Yes, that was a heartbreaking affair. That was when we were all full of ourselves, when victory was close, or when we thought victory was in our hands. We were cocksure of ourselves. This special story or experience of mine happened. We were somewhere in the south of Russia. I think the name of the river was Mils, and the engineers, pioneers as we called them, they had put a pontoon bridge across the river. It was not a very wide river, but that was the only way by which our vehicles, panzers, everything could cross to the other side, towards the east, for miles. So there was quite heavy traffic, and it was steppe country around there, meaning that the vehicles came from all over the place. There was no road leading to it. They just came over the steppe, and the steppe was dried out. One could drive everywhere, really. Now, what happened, that almost every day some vehicle blew up. Somebody had dug in a telamine, a plate mine. They are not very heavy. They are like a large plate. One can easily do it. And they do quite a bit of damage. They would not destroy a panzer, but they could blow the chains off. But they can destroy all other vehicles by, there's an explosion and then they burn. And, of course, they can kill troops. You can step on a telamine and a telamine and not be blown off. But on the other hand, you can. They are more for light vehicles, really. Anyway, we were